Welcome to the Gospel Rant. I'm Dr. Bill Sinyard. We're in the second part of a three-part conversation with my son-in-law, Jeff Buster. He's the pastor at Christ Community Church in St. Charles, Illinois, and the father of two young boys. And we'll pick up the conversation where Jeff is speaking about the importance of agency for your child. Great stuff. Enjoy.
So we talked about this before, but I'm really into giving agency to the child with options. That, and I will often say, what do you think is going to be the best punishment for this time? Because the goal is not punishment. An authoritarian parent, they're threatened by disobedience. So the punishment always has to be one bit bigger than the fault. But I want him to choose the agency. So what do you think your heart needs at this moment? Do you need a conversation with God? Do you need a conversation with me? Do you need a timeout? And then I'll give him the options so that he doesn't say, I don't know, I need a bowl of ice cream. So I'll give him the options of what I think would be appropriate for that time.
Now, if a parent was listening, that's not a good place to start.
The options?
Yeah. Or is it?
Well, it wouldn't be a good place to start because they don't know that there has to be a punishment. The parent would have to establish a relationship with the child so the child knows something's going to have to happen, and it's not a free-for-all. Dad's and mum's heart is for me to change. I'll say, what needs to happen for you not to do that again? And obviously, he's going to go to the default. Give me another chance. Give me grace. And sometimes I'll include that in the options. But sometimes I'll say, do you want this to be a timeout? Or do you want this to be no soccer ball time when you get home? So sort of removing one thing or timeout.
So I'm struck again as sort of dealer's choice for you. It's kind of like I have all these tools and I'm looking at my son Malcolm and going, which one looks like it could bring the most change of behavior, the most reliance, dependence upon God? Which of these tools can I use?
Exactly. And if I bring it back to the gospel again, everything that God does is for our benefit. His goal is to love us for our good because he has such a storehouse of love and such a storehouse of good. So if he disciplines us for our good, if he gives us grace, it's for our good. And Hebrews tells us that he disciplines us for the purpose of showing that he's our Father. Because we need it. And so he does it for our good.
Right.
So I can't emphasize enough that we interact with our child or discipline for their good.
His nose doesn't get bent out of shape. He doesn't need reparation. He's infinite.
Right.
So it's all for our good.
Yep.
Which, oh my goodness, that's a, I mean, what religion can ever claim that, that the deity is actually bent towards the good of, not his good, but the good of the people.
Right.
Oh my goodness, that's stunning.
So going back to my main goal is for my son to want a relationship with the Father in heaven. My main goal in my discipline with him is to want to maintain a relationship with me, not to do right.
Okay.
So he feels...
Yeah, unpack that because that's radical.
So essentially, I want him to feel all I want is to be back at the same status with dad prior to my sin and to know that everything is okay again. Rather than, I know if I do this, then that will happen. I mean, I'm reminded of the prophets telling the Israelites, stop bringing smelly sacrifices. Like, just stop it. Just give me your heart. And I want my son's heart more than his action. So that when he goes into, dad, I just... What anything I can help you with right now? I'm like, aw, son, you just want to be with me. And you're just, what you're saying right now is, I will give you anything because I want to be with you. Not, all right, tell me what I need to do.
That's worship, I'm thinking. You know, that's what God desires when we're gathering together.
That's what he wants with us, absolutely. Yeah. Another thing is, I want to be eager for them to feel that they can change you. So thinking about prayer with God. You know, Lewis talks about prayer being the most powerful thing that the Christian has because the all-authoritative God has chosen to be moved by humans. When Christ wept over Jerusalem, he was moved by human. And God is moved by humans. And so I want my son to feel that he can move his father so that I'm not a rock that he has to always bow down to.
Mm-hmm.
Again, authoritarian parent rather than authoritative parent. Authoritarian parent says, I am unmovable, I am rock. Rather than sometimes my son will plead for mercy. He doesn't use the word mercy. But sometimes I will see something and he will say, Dad, you don't understand. I didn't bother the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I walked past the dog and it just barked at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sometimes our dogs can do that. And I will say, Malcolm, I didn't see it. It looked like you bothered them. Are you telling me that it was their fault and not yours? And he says, yes, Dad. And I said, you know what? I'm going to trust you because I'm eager to trust you. If you say that's what happened, that's what happened. And he will literally say, whew, that was a close one. But I would rather for him to feel that Dad's eager to trust me rather than to be duped for that one time.
And there's a chance he was lying.
There's a chance.
I mean, he comes from you guys.
There's a chance, but I want him to know that he can move me through an interaction with me.
Why? What is the relationship gained from that? Baby boomer, I was raised, right or wrong, Dad has the final say, and I can argue all I want, but it doesn't matter. And Dad said, this is what we're going to do. You cannot move him. And I got a really nice dad.
Yep, yeah.
But that's just the way he was raised and the way I was raised.
Yeah. Well, I'll draw your attention to when Yahweh was just about, I mean, he had enough of the Israelites, those disobedient, grumbling children. He was about just to them all.
That's
like, I'm done with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got the intercessor, Moses, who said, you know, if you do that, the nations will think that you failed to take care of your children. And so
why would any other nation follow you?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And
there's something about relationships where you need that.
Because the Father had given permission to Moses to have that kind of intercessor relationship, God chose to be moved by Moses.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it's written from a human point of view.
Yeah.
We weren't given the divine point of view from that. We take it as it's given to us.
Right.
It's given from a human point of view. And now, obviously, we have an intercessor with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I want my son to know that he has such a relationship with me that we move back and forth as a relationship, not a set of standards. And humans move.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. I think it doesn't challenge God's sovereignty, right? I guess that's what theologians would say. But in God's sovereignty, he wants to honor you and me so much that he's actually willing to make it appear, respond in a way, that's even better, that it looks like you have that kind of authority.
Oh, I'd say this. The more eager or need you have for authority, the more authoritative you will come across. The less you need for authority in life, the more and more confident you are that, look, I know that I have authority. I don't need to establish it. The more you will put that kind of language, I am rock, look at me raw, aside, and you will say, I mean, think of Christ. The most powerful being in all the universe. Now get this. How did he come? Lowly manger. Right in the middle, why are we called to come to him? Because he's lowly and humble.
Mm-hmm.
How did he leave? On a lowly donkey. The most powerful being in the universe did not need to establish authority. He came lowly.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose to be moved by the beggar and the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I want my son to not think of me as a powerhouse, but someone with all authority in his life, but he has my ear.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
We could call it lowly parenting. You know,
yeah, I don't have good language for it, but I do know it's effective.
I'm seeing it.
I do know it's effective.
I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
I wish that I had known your wife would be much less messed up. Sorry, man. My bad. Oh!
Well, wear that part out. No, if this is for Aubrey listening, I don't think she's messed up at all. I pretty much married an angel.
Well done.
Yeah. Another thing is I don't bend your standards of obedience, but be flexible on timing, manner, and content of obedience. This sort of goes to what I'm talking about.
You're not looking for perfection.
You're after a heart of obedience.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a different thing.
More than the outcome of a particular action.
Yeah.
I want my son's heart. The discipline aspect is the behavioral change. Like I want to set patterns and routines. And in saying that, maybe a balanced way of thinking about it is I want me and my wife to be the biggest things in my son's eyes. So sometimes when he's just overtaken by emotion.
Which is normal for kids.
He doesn't need another loud clanging cymbal. Look at me. And just sort of yelling at him. What he needs is someone to get down at his level. Mm-hmm. Look him in the eye and say, Malcolm, look me in the eye. I know I want you to look me in the eye. Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to tell me these words, or I want you to say, okay, daddy, or I need you to, and just little points of obedience so that he starts transitioning to, my dad is the biggest thing in my eyes right now. Mm-hmm. And all he wants me to do is this little thing of obedience, little one, little one. And I know I'm going to end up with, I want you to walk across the street, walk up to Strider and say, I'm sorry for punching you in the gut.
One of the neighbor kids.
But I want little points of obedience along the way. So he's thinking, I'm doing this for dad. That's sort of me thinking about discipline. Again, discipline is very, I find it extremely important because it mirrors the gospel aspect so much. And this is sort of just general interaction with him. I find it so necessary to give random, not set, but random forms of appreciation and affection. So I think it's just this morning I woke up. He's like, hey, Dad. I said, hey, Mal. I said, Malcolm, I have a question. I don't get why I like you so much. Why is that? He's like, I don't know, Dad. I was like, it's just amazing to me. He's like, I know. And sometimes you just, he's like, Malcolm, I want to tell you something. I know, you love me so much.
I've seen that. Yeah.
And I'm like, that's right, that's
and
right.
And you know he loves it.
He loves it, loves it. And other times, actually almost every night now, just I'll put him down, we'll do the whole to bed thing, and Mum and I will be sitting on the couch, it'll be about 15 minutes after, and I'll just yell out, Malcolm, I really, really love you. And he's like, love you too, Dad. But the random forms, I think, are even more powerful than the set forms when you're meant to say it.
So not just a discipline, but throughout
the day. Yeah, just any time. Mm-hmm. And especially outside of accomplishments. Mm-hmm. Just randomly walk up to him. Mm-hmm. Hey, how you doing? Good. Mm-hmm. Oh, I really like you right now.
Mm-hmm. Pass the cereal.
Yeah, and grab their language because he's like, Dad, why do I like you so much? And I'm like, oh, like is an important one for him. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use like then because he knows like. Mm-hmm. Why do I like you so much? Yeah, another thing would be become undignified in your affections. God doesn't ask us to become God in order to relate with him. Mm-hmm. God became human in order to relate with us. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a ritual that we have... each time that I put him to bed is that we call it just a running kiss. Mm-hmm. And he stands up on the bed. He goes, start reversing. So I start backing up. And I will snake through the house. And he's like, are you in the kitchen? Now go to the stairs. And then he says, ready, set, go. And I become the most indignified person in that house. And my socks slipping through. And I run and rush towards him. And I'll tell you, there is nothing like my son's face when he's standing there and he's watching his father full sprint run to bear tackle him and kiss him. And then I say, do you think I could give you 1,000 kisses in 30 seconds? He's like, I don't know. And I was like, watch this. And then I'll kiss him on every part in order just for him just to, and he just giggles and giggles and giggles with delight. Mm. And obviously, this has, in my mind, a huge parallel to when the prodigal son made the big mess up. He had a whole speech formed, and then it was the father who was running to the son in the indignified fashion. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the son running to the father. He was on his knees groveling. And so I just think that it's important for our children to watch ourselves be, and the big popular word right now is reckless. And I don't know if
reckless love. If
people push against that, is God's love reckless or not? But
from our point of view, it is.
How about indignified love? And you could say reckless love, but it's just, you know what? I'm not owned by this world enough to think that it's going to be a barrier on how I interact around you.
Well, that fleshes out John 3:16, right? God's love was so undignified.
Right, right.
That he gave his own son. I mean, that's what bigger indignity.
Right. Another expression of affection is your kid needs to see you be fully human. Otherwise, they feel they're not allowed to be human around you. So
yeah, unpack that.
It is so important that my son, one, sees me apologize to him for things that I mean to do, I didn't do.
Got it.
Son, Malcolm, did I hurt your arm when I grabbed you? Yeah. I'm really sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I grabbed you too hard. Or things that I didn't mean to do. Dad, you stepped on my toy. Oh, I am really, really sorry. Not, you shouldn't have left your toy there. Mm-hmm. Why'd you put it? I was like, oh, man.
Which would have been true.
It would have been true. It
would have torn down what
exactly,
you've been building up.
But, oh, you worked really hard at that, and I just stepped on it. I'm really, really sorry. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, just for them to practice both saying and hearing sorry from that young age, it is important for my son to hear me say sorry to my wife.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And so he'll say, Dad.
And he watches.
He says, Dad, you need to say sorry to mom.
Says it.
Oh, he instructs it. When Aubrey and
I haven't seen that.
Now, hypothetically, if my wife and I had an extended conversation.
Yeah, assuming.
Right? Yeah, assuming that. And he's in the middle of
it. For the sake of those sinners.
For those other people. My son will say, Dad, you need to apologize to mom.
Oh, my goodness.
Because she'll be crying. Hypothetically, she'll be crying. And he's like, you're hurting mom right now, and you need to say sorry to her.
What?
It's important for him to hear me say those words. On the other hand, it's important for my son to see my affections for my wife. Sometimes I'll say, Malcolm, I'm going to show you how to kiss your wife. Right?
You've been telling your five-year-old this.
Right? I'm like, oh, Malcolm, why do I like your mom so much? He needs to see the full spectrum. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he needs to, I'll say, Malcolm, I'm really, really frustrated right now because I thought that truck was going to come and it didn't. And I just feel like there's so much happening. And for him to hear me say the words, I'm frustrated right now and not punching a wall, because I'm always teaching him to express what you say, use expressive words. You say, I'm frustrated right now, or I need some space right now. Rather than leave me alone or something like
that. He uses
that
phrase. I've seen that.
Yeah, I need space right now. So it is very necessary for my son to see the full range of emotions so that he can practice mirroring my emotions from affections, apologies, frustrations. Otherwise, he'll think I need to be master of all around my parents. Rather than my parents are just further along than where I am at.
We will stop the podcast here. And the next one, the final of our three-part series, Jeff will begin sharing the importance of teaching and showing your child how to pray from the heart, vulnerable, not using churchy institutional language. So once again, if you struggle feeling like a failure as a parent, even a disappointment to Jesus, check out The Dance, the-dance.org. We made the online gospel experience for people like you who struggle with a lack of enoughness and connectedness, which is our euphemisms for shame and loneliness. And by the way, that's all of us. And both are epidemic among parents today. We're in the process of creating an online path for parents as well. We call it Good Enough Parents. It should be jam-packed, should be lots of fun, shame-free. Should be ready later this year. Send us a line, bill@gospel-app.com, and we'll let you know when it is ready to go. Take heart, child of God.
Have you ever considered yourself a messenger? Whether it's mics like this, bookshelves around the world, stages to take, or art to make, or perhaps businesses to build, it's time we start testifying truth unashamedly, creatively, and in love. My name is Tamara Andress, the host of the Messenger Movement podcast, which is designed to catalyze Christians to speak, write, build, and testify. If you're ready to turn your message into a movement and want to run with other messengers doing the thing at scale globally, search and follow the Messenger Movement podcast on your favorite podcast platform today or lifeaudio.com.